Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. It is Monday, July 19th, 2021. We say that always for those of you listening on a downloaded basis. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. And we're just thrilled to have 11 years under our belt. Alice and I were talking about that a little bit here last week. It's hard to believe it's been that long, but we enjoy bringing this podcast to you. And thank you so much for your many, many comments. You can email me at david@tms-advisors.com for your ideas or guests, or you can text me at 512-632-2900. That's my cell phone, comes right to me. In fact, a number of you have that and will text me even while we're in the middle of the podcast. Love hearing from you. It's a great way for me to flip your questions before our clients. So you can do it that way, or you can also go to LinkedIn, send me a LinkedIn message. So good to have you with us, and we're excited about today's Hot Topic segment. You're going to want to stay tuned all the way through to the Hot Topic. We have Will Robinson, CEO of Encapture, joining us. We're going to be talking about why employee experience is key to today's lending market. You'll enjoy the interview. I enjoyed my conversation last week as we were getting ready for the interview this week, and some great content as we try our best to continue to just do better and better, bringing you meaningful content. Let's get over and say a special thank you to Industry Syndicate. We're grateful for our relationship with IndustrySyndicate.com. If you go to their website, you can see all the podcasts are out there that are talking about how to successfully deal with realtors, how to bring you more business. A lot on the sales front, but there are some others that focus on what we do is the operational front or some other aspects of the operations. Someone just texted me and says, what? I've never done that. I'm going there now. Like, it's appreciate it. All right. Say thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Appreciate them. And be sure to sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance app so you can have your voice heard in Washington, D.C. on the Hill. The MBA does such a great job of championing the issues that are important to us, the mortgage lenders. So encourage you to support their efforts by getting the Mortgage Action Alliance app. Make sure your voice is heard. Also, we're all excited about getting together for the annual conference in San Diego. If you have not registered for that conference, be sure to do so. Of course, it's a big discount if you become a member, so get a hold of Tricia Megalazzo or one of her staff on how to become a member of the MBA. Appreciate all that they do. Thanks, Tricia, and to the whole staff at the MBA. Also, Fusion Mortgage Bot Solution does a great job. Their entire platform is hosted in the cloud. It's dedicated to creating a greater user experience for your customer, and it's also really nice to use. I was on a call, one of their webinars this last week, and they do a great job of communicating out trends that are going on. Now, I know they have a lot of market share in the banks and credit union space, but you independent mortgage bankers, make sure you check out Fusion Mortgage Bot POS. It also personalizes the application process. They do a great job. So check it out at our website, click on Lending under the sponsorship page, and the interview I did with Dan Putney, along with some of the comments from Dan. Appreciate our partnership with Finastra. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Now, these are two co-ops that I highly recommend you consider joining one or the other. Now, we belong to both, and others do as well. Now, the MBA is so effective at what they do, and these conferences are good, but they're so big. The value that Lenders One brings is the fact that they will bring you up close and personal to each other, and the peer analysis that both of these groups do is really, really excellent. We had Justin DeMolia on June 28th. Go back and listen to that interview, and we're working on another interview with Mortgage Collaborative, so stay tuned. We'll have one of them on as a guest, give us an update as well. Also, the CMLA, which is the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, grateful for them, their partnership, as well as Incelerate. It's an insane product, and Josh Friend is a good friend, and you should make him a friend in that product as well. They do a great job of helping you with a borrower engagement and communicating and interacting between you, the lender, and the borrower. Go listen to the interview we did in June 21st with Josh Brim. Also, Knowledge Scoop, great learning management system, as well as Mobility MMI, Mortgage Market Intelligence. So check out the interview that I did with Ben Turling over the 4th of July weekend. Great interview. It's getting a ton of downloads and some great strategies in there, as well as Modex. Got an interview coming up with them in the future. I encourage you to check out both of these very powerful technologies when it comes to recruiting. Modex has got just enough of a difference in the feature set from Mobility. While they do a lot of the similar things, we're finding value in using both of them. Also, I want to say a special thank you to Rob, Les, Alice, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week. Let's get over to MBA's Rob Van Raphorst and this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Late last week, FHFA announced that it will eliminate the 50 basis point adverse market refinance fee as of August 1st. This is in response to MBA's advocacy. MBA President and CEO Bob Brooksmith released a statement applauding the announcement. In recent weeks, FHFA, under the leadership of Sondra Thompson, has taken several actions that should benefit consumers and market participants alike while promoting the smooth functioning of the housing finance system. MBA will remain closely engaged with FHFA as other policy decisions are assessed by the agency. And finally, MBA's latest forbearance and call volume survey last week showed that the total number of loans now in forbearance has decreased to 3.5%. MBA estimates 1.75 million homeowners are currently in forbearance plans. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
3.5%, that's an encouraging number. Love to see that. Those loans in forbearance dropping. Hopefully it's because they're working it out. We need some housing inventory. I hope we don't have to get into foreclosures to boost housing inventory, but encouraging number. Good job. Appreciate you very much, MBA, and all that you guys do there. So let's get over to Les Parker with a macro view of the markets. Les, what do you have for us, and what's the music parody this week?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy. When it's hot, it's hot.
Yeah.
Chairman Powell, do you think inflation is too hot?
Well, Senator, it depends on what hot is. At the Fed, we debate two questions. What is too hot, and how long does hot last? The Fed sticks to its definition that the current hot has not lasted long enough to be hot. But if it gets hotter and lasts longer, then it's hot, and the Fed will act, like Fed Chairman Powell Volcker did in the 70s. Since the creation of inflation, economists argue about how to measure it. So the Fed uses a few approaches to CPI, and they don't show a spike in prices. And when it's not, it's not. Add liquidity and let them roll again. When it's hot, it's hot. These views are my own. Get more while it's hot at tmspotlight.com.
Yeah, when you're hot, you're hot. It's hot in Texas. Good song choice, Les. Love that. Yeah, what's going on with the Feds? Very interesting stuff. Look at what's happened to the markets right now. It's very interesting. And we have a recorded update. Matt went out and was playing lacrosse over the weekend, wrote me, says, I got to go to the hospital. I've got to get this x-rayed. I hurt myself. That's weekend warriors. We sit at our desk and then we go out and go play some sport, weekend athletes. And that sometimes can result in a trip to ER or to get some x-rays. That's where Matt's at. So we got a pre-recorded comment. So let's get over to Matt. What you got, Matt?
This is Matt Graham with MBS Live Market Update. Last week was an interesting one for the bond market as yields pushed back up after hitting the lowest levels in months on July 8th. In fact, the pushback started on the Friday of the previous week, and we were really waiting to see how last week went as sort of a verdict on the previous week's weakness. The key considerations at the beginning of the week were twofold. It was the Treasury auction process and the release of the CPI data on Tuesday morning, CPI being Consumer Price Index, one of the key measures of inflation, and the report that the bond market has been, at the very least, willing to react to as a part of the whole feeling out process of potential post-COVID inflation. Inflation, of course, matters greatly to the bond market, but we're being asked to sort of suspend disbelief on that because there is a likelihood, depending on whom you speak to, that inflation is transitory, driven by supply chain disruptions that will eventually work themselves out and resolve with historically more normal inflation, even if it's a little bit higher than it has been in the post-financial crisis period. So starting off last week, we had the 3-year and the 10-year note auction both on Monday, and that went well enough. There was only minimal weakness to start the new week, and it was really more of a punt of Tuesday to set the tone for the week. Unfortunately, the tone was set in a negative direction by the combination of the CPI data and the 30-year bond auction. CPI came in at 4.5% versus 4.0 forecasts, and that's at the core level, which strips out more volatile components like food and energy prices. 4.5 is a huge number, the biggest we've seen in decades, and of course, much higher than the forecast, and even higher than the previous reading of 3.8%. And at any other time in economic history, this would be grounds for a fairly substantial bond market sell-off. As it stands, we just barely got a blip from 1.35 up to about 1.385 in terms of 10-year yields, and that only lasted about 30 minutes before bonds were rallying back down to previous levels, which is just fairly staggering if you ask me. Bigger mover of the day was the 30-year bond auction. It wasn't the weakest one we've ever seen, but it was quite weak and enough to make bond traders sort of reconsider where they wanted to price the long end of the yield curve at the present time. In hindsight, moving into the current week and even into the end of last week, we could see that that reaction to the 30-year auction probably had more to do with just sort of an indigestion among bond market participants and dealers left holding the bag with maybe more 30-year supply than they wanted and being forced to sort of redistribute it to the rest of the street. So basically, it was like throwing a wrench into the wood chipper. And once markets worked through that, they started to calm down, but they didn't rally so aggressively that we should just have assumed that rates would be doing what they're doing this morning. So coming to the current week, what are rates doing this morning? If you haven't seen yet, 10-year yields are down about 10 bips, trading around 1.2%. They were as low as 1.176%, level very few people thought we would see at this point in the year, and something that is only made possible by a resurgence in COVID. What? A resurgence in COVID? You may be wondering, what's up with that? Because everywhere you look, life is back to normal in many ways. People are out doing more things, and case counts overall are very low still. But the thing that the market is watching in that respect is the week-over-week change or the rate of change, indicators that can help them ascertain the momentum of a potential resurgence in COVID or impacts from the Delta variant. And that is as high as it's been since January of 2021. And specifically, just so we're clear on the data that I'm using, I'm talking about the week-over-week change in new COVID cases. And those numbers on three separate occasions in the past, well, since July 9th, have been at the highest levels since January. And if we want to smooth out those spikes by looking at a seven-day moving average, that seven-day moving average is up around 12,570 right now. The previous high from back in April was around 7,000. So definitely moving in the wrong direction, and it correlates quite well with the decline in bond yields over the same time. So that case count trajectory probably would need to level off and go back into negative territory, which it really hasn't seen since before June, and in order for yields to bounce here and move disturbingly higher. Between now and then, I think the path of least resistance, at least for the past few months, has been toward lower yields as sort of the euphoric economic optimism associated with post-COVID reopening runs its course, and we're left to wait to see what the economy does in the fall, what the Fed has to say about it in terms of tapering, and really how the post-COVID economy is evolving and whether or not the Delta variant is counting for a resurgence in cases that threatens additional economic restrictions in various states. In other words, we're not out of the woods yet. Bond markets are reflecting that. They're also undergoing a bit of a pain trade since everybody assumed rates would be going higher. There's an imbalance of positions that's left traders sort of vulnerable to a snowball move, a short covering, short squeeze rally coming back in the other direction. We'll definitely take it for now. Great effect on rates. Combine that with the removal of the adverse market fee, which lenders have already priced in as of Friday, and many lenders have removed the fee even on locked loans, which is really nice to see, an honorable, logical thing that's having a huge impact on pricing power, especially for refinances. Of course, it doesn't have any impact on purchases, but it definitely has an impact on refis and is actually going to bring some borrowers from earlier this year into the money for a refi right about the time their six-month EPO windows are up. So definitely expecting more activity on the refi front if you're not already seeing it, and also still sort of guarding against reversal in this bond market positivity driven by the current COVID situation. So if that's able to get more under control and reverse course, then of course this move is in jeopardy. But between now and then, definitely enjoying what we're seeing in markets and on rate sheets. That'll do it for this week. Back with you guys next week.
Yeah, throwing a wrench into the wood chipper is an understatement. And then looking for the Delta variant. I just love listening to this guy, right? So Matt, appreciate you getting in there. I hope you're feeling better, man. So good to have you with us. Just a pleasure. Matt, good job. Appreciate you very much. We've got Alice Alvey, CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. And she's got this week's legislative update. Man, lots to talk about, Alice. A lot going on.
There is. And I love Matt's report. That was terrific. Well, and of course, Les's song parody is perfect.
Yeah.
They both played well together perfectly. So for my report,
we've got the
refinance fee, or some people refer to it as a tax on refinances. So thank you, Sandra Thompson, for getting rid of that. And we'll see how that plays out over the next several weeks for lenders, as Matt alluded to, taking a look at existing pipelines and all those new borrowers that are now in the money, as we say, for refinance. And everybody will be out there arm wrestling and fighting. The next thing is, and this may or may not be included in certain housing infrastructure bills that are being worked on, but this one is called the Down Payment Toward Equity Act of 2021. And I was taking a little deeper dive into this, with the idea being that this goes through, it's a big taxpayer bill. So for those of you who don't like the idea of spending billions of dollars, I think the price tag on this one was $600 billion to try and fund down payment closing costs and discount points, essentially, for borrowers who would be eligible for this program. The borrowers eligible for this program are those who are with median income at 120% or less of the median income. They're a first-time home buyer, as we've traditionally defined, with the last 3 years they haven't owned a home. But there's a third criteria, which is being a first-generation home buyer. So a whole different market. Still have yet to identify how the heck we would verify that, if we need a mortgage report on that individual. They have some complexity in the definition, but this is just a draft legislation. So how it actually ends up being, we'll wait and see. But it is who would be eligible for up to $20,000 towards down payment and closing costs. And then there's a third criteria, that if an individual that's part of a socially and economically disadvantaged group, they would also be eligible for up to $25,000. So it really is a very big piece of legislation as far as the dollars attached to it. This would be administered by your state housing finance authority. And it is something that is being discussed in the halls of Congress as we speak, to be able to see whether or not it would be able to move forward. Now, as far as mortgage loans, it could be attached to, it would be eligible for Fannie, Freddie, or FHA. For me, when I look at it, my concern is obviously FHA will probably be the product of choice, which means adding a lot of pressure to the mortgage insurance fund. I think it would be very difficult to try and do these loans on 2 to 4 units. So I really would love to see MBA advocate on, let's just keep it to single family. If this is going to move forward, one unit properties, the borrowers have no landlord experience and no reserves. So I think there's a lot that goes with this program. As a side note, it does have what I claw back, or a recapture provision, if the borrower refinances and pays off that loan within 5 years. So it does have an obligation on the home buyer to stay in the home as owner occupied for a minimum of 5 years. So more to come on this. We're going to keep watching it. Doesn't even have a House bill number. You can look it up by using the term Down Payment Toward Equity Act of 2021 if you want to read more about that. And then the third thing is that we have Jenny May out there now looking for requests for input to increase the liquidity requirement for lenders. It's a short read, but they're looking for a request for input from everybody. We have until August 9th, all the responses must be back, and they're looking at increasing the Ginnie Mae net worth requirement, increasing the liquidity requirement, and adding a risk-based capital ratio for qualifying for Ginnie Mae. So take a look at that one as well. Got a little bit of time because it just rolled out on Monday. And that's my update for today, Dave.
Yeah, was it this Monday, like today, that it rolled out, or was that last week?
Last Monday, the RFI was published. Yeah.
One of the questions that came in is, do they suggest amounts, or they just say they're contemplating raising it?
Yeah, so the dollar amount, so they're proposing a 25 bips of the GSE outstanding obligation would get added to the existing net worth requirement. The liquidity would go up 5 bips of GSE outstanding obligations and 20 bips of total loans held for sale. And then the risk-based capital requirement of a 10% capital ratio. And you can look in the proposal. It's a real short one, real quick, easy to read.
And
they'll show you the math in there. I like the way they laid this one out.
Good. Yeah. A government agency doing something short and sweet and concise and clear.
It really starts to align a little bit with some of the CFPB requirements, is what we're starting to see. They all want to compensate for having liquidity beyond what's just being held with them.
Yeah, it's understandable. It seems like we do a lot of helping companies get approved. All of them, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae, HUD, and Ginnie Mae has been a little more of a challenge lately. And so we know that there are things in flux there. We're trying to get Greg Keith back on here in the podcast and get an update. That's what we need to do. Anyway, Alice, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome, Dave. Thanks for all you do. I don't know if everybody realizes how much work Dave goes through to keep this show going week after week after week. And thank you for all you do to keep this going, Dave.
Well, it's a labor of love. I love doing this, and I do it with some of my favorite people, and you being one of them, Alice. Thank you so much for being a part of it for 11 years. It is a lot of work. It's finding the guests, vetting the guests, going through all that, but it is worth it because of the service we're providing. You make it that much better, too. Thank you so much, Alice. Appreciate it. Well, Alan Pollock is not joining us today. He is on vacation, or so we assume. We haven't heard from him. That's really what's going on. We haven't heard from Alan. Alan, where are you? We missed you getting the tech updates, but that's all right. We'd wish you well. He has been one busy guy lately. I don't know if his old company got acquired, LoanLogix. We miss Alan. We love hearing from him. But anyway, this does end the weekly mortgage update. Again, if you're listening live, just stay right here because you will continue right on into the hot topic. But if you listen on a downloaded basis, you will just progress into the next podcast. Folks, welcome to today's Lickin' on Lending Hot Topic segment. We have as our guest today, Will Robinson. Will is up in the Dallas area. He is CEO of Encapture. We're going to be talking about the focus on why employee experience is a key in today's lending market. We talk about the borrower experience a lot, very, very important topic, but we're going to take a little bit different angle. It's the employee experience. What are we doing for our staff? We'll be sharing a little bit along the way about Encapture as well. Fascinating company. But Will, good to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave. Glad to be here.
Well, this is your first time being on the podcast. We have many repeat guests, so I hope you'll come back. But tell us a little bit about yourself so our listeners get a chance to get to know you.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate it. I've been in the financial services space and software space my whole career. Been here in Encapture the past 2 years, based here in Dallas. Yeah, and really, really love serving the mortgage industry. It's a fascinating space. It's so unique. And this is one of the most unique times, I think, in many people's careers. And so it's really fun to be able to help our customers navigate that.
Yeah. Well, you do a great job about it. And a shout out to Brandon Young on your team, one of your senior execs there, and does a great job. And we're thrilled that he put us in touch with you. And we're excited to have you there. One of the things I enjoyed about our conversation last week when we were preparing for today's live podcast is the focus that you have on using technology to enhance the work-life balance. And I just really love the fact that you're doing that. It's a big part of a consulting business we do. We try to enhance the work-life balance. And we always have this phrase, thank God it's Monday. At least that's the cultures we hope to create within our clients. We all understand TGIF. It is at the end of the week. And yes, we should look forward to the weekends, but we should create work environments that are so positive that and enjoyable. It's work. So it is a J-O-B, but we can make it such that where people look forward to coming to work on Monday. So TGIM, as well as TGIT, where Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all the way throughout the week. So anyway, excited to hear about that. But tell us a little bit about how lenders are handling staffing, and especially in these increased demands. Interest rates like Mass Report took a nice little rally here. So I don't know if it's going to kick off a refinance rally, but we're definitely enjoying a lot of increased demand. Talk about that.
It's a really interesting time, Dave, for lenders. Challenging in some respects. It's the best of times, and in some ways, it's the worst of times. Keeping up with the demand that the industry has seen over the past 18, 24 months has been really hard, especially for smaller lenders. Keeping your senior folks engaged at the high speed they've been. They've been working overtime nights and weekends now for a long, long time. And trying to staff up with new junior employees, it's just hard to find high quality staff. And so you see lenders trying to poach folks from other lenders or hiring people in from other industries. And it's creating a lot of friction in the process. And like I said earlier, this is a generational season that the industry's in to take advantage of the demand. I think a lot of folks are caught flat-footed a little bit. So it's been really interesting to see.
So one of some of the ways that you're seeing lenders stay competitive and retain top talent within the current market, is it all about pay or is there other number of other factors?
Yeah, pay is a really hard one because pay only goes so far and that's becoming less of a differentiator too. I think the lenders that we see that do really, really well here and are really, truly winning in this space. And I could even talk about this for us at our own company as a software company. We had an inflection point at the beginning of COVID saying, hey, look, this is a really unique time in our industry and unique time in the world. And some of our competitors are maybe scrambling to just maintain. And we want to use this as an opportunity to really push ahead and further differentiate. And I know there are a lot of lenders out there trying to do the same. Hey, how do we get ahead of this? So we can kind of meet the demand we're seeing and really come out ahead and kind of be a whole different level than where we were even a couple of years ago. And a lot of those lenders that are coming out ahead that we speak with are doing a really good job of thinking through that employee experience, really listening to their staff saying, hey, what does your day look like? What do you like about your day? What's really frustrating as part of your job? If you could snap your fingers and not have to do something today, what would it be? And it's really surprising to hear, because this sets a culture at the lender of, hey, we care. We care about you. And we want to make sure that you can be successful in your job. And two, some of the findings are actually fairly straightforward, easy fixes, things that can be remediated fairly easily, not very expensive. But it sends this message that, hey, we really care. And yes, we're busy and we're all going to share in the success that we're having. And I think it's, besides pay, I think a lot of it is, it starts with listening and making sure you're equipping people with the tools and technology they need to have a quiet, high quality day. That tech becomes part of that cultural experience, in as much as free lunches or Friday afternoons off or the traditional benefits that I think they just only go so far.
It's so true. I think it's a lot about creating the right culture. And Alice, I want to get over to you, because one of the things that Union Home does so well is create a really good culture while maintaining good productivity. And love to see you participate and get in a couple of questions here. Turn it, toss the mic to you.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you so much. I love the insight. And I think one of the things I'd love to know, you gave us some examples just there about what some of the team members are not looking for. Can you add a few more ideas on what they are looking for and kind of stretch that out for us? Because isn't that generational? Are the 20-somethings and first-time career people looking for something different than those who have been in their career and are a little more seasoned? I'd love to get your thoughts on what are team members looking for, and is that different by generation?
Yeah, that's a great question and perspective. It's interesting. Lots of millennial and Gen Z folks are entering the workplace or have been here, and there's a lot of insecurity in those two generations. The Great Recession a decade ago, when a lot of millennials were entering the workforce, COVID over the past year and a half for a lot of Gen Z coming out of school. And so the traditional kind of high value benefits of the 401k type thing or some sort of tenure-based award, it's that stuff, it doesn't resonate as much. And so what we're seeing is you're trying to attract high quality talent, especially in the younger generations, and they come in and then they get to their desk and you put in front of them, this is what your day is going to look like. And very quickly, there's a strong reaction there, positive or negative. If the younger generation likes being equipped with technology that makes their job easy, they look around at maybe some of the repetitive or mundane tasks they have to do and think, wait a minute, there's got to be a better way to do this. They're not afraid to speak up about that and say, hey, look, here's an idea about how to do something. And so I think creating that culture of listening and feedback and saying, how can we equip our people to be very productive in their day? We say we value them. Are we giving them the tools and resources available for them to be successful? I also would say a second thing here is the kind of the work from home trend. And this has been hard for us as a company. I love our people being here in the office. I love the collaboration it provides, especially for our new folks that are just joining our team. There's a lot of learning through osmosis that happens through that. At the same time, there is a strong demand for saying, hey, look, if I want to work from home a couple days a week, I'd like the right to do that and I can be productive. And I think starting with this positive assumption of saying, hey, people can work from home and be productive and contribute to our team versus saying, well, I don't know if you're really working. And so I think a lot of this is as much positioning the interaction with the junior folks as it is some sort of tangible benefit. But certainly we've seen over and over again technology to help them do their jobs better and make sure they can focus on the more fun, interesting parts of their day has been a game changer.
Well, and I think we could spend an entire show on the different viewpoints on the working from anywhere, working from home, versus the collaboration that you get. And like you said, the learning from others, which we have seen a lot of. We've got a great culture. We have great hiring in place. When we onboard partners, we really do want to spend the time with them, the energy and effort. And it has to be ongoing, right? How well do we keep in touch with partners after they've come on board through different types of shadowing and mentoring programs? And all of that takes a lot of talent to be there for them. It takes a lot of time. And so it therefore takes a lot of money. So do you have any suggestions for investing in the team and yet still managing the margins after especially listening to Matt's report and the way the markets may be in the future?
Yeah, it's a super interesting time. Everyone's so busy, but with the rates and margins being tight, a lot of this comes down to, and Alex, you brought up a great point on kind of the mentoring and engaging across generations in your workforce. A lot of that, it's not this either or, which we always see as this false dichotomy of, well, if I spend more time investing in my team, then naturally that's going to hurt my profitability. Here at Encapture, we're in the business benefits of helping bring automation to the process, which actually frees people up to have more time in their day. And so as a leader of a lender, if you're looking at your customer-facing roles, how do you help these folks spend as much time serving the customer proactively and minimize the administrative part of their job? If that's collecting documents or tracking down missing documents, which is a lot of what we deal with, how can you make sure that person is equipped with the data they need to be very proactive in their relationship management? And similarly, in more back office roles, maybe a loan processor or underwriter, your best employees typically are the ones that can problem solve. And we see this time and time again. The most senior folks on these teams, the people that lenders would hate to lose, would do anything not to lose them. The reason that they're so good is not because they can process a loan file faster than anybody else necessarily, but it's because they know what to do when there's a unique situation or there's a problem. They know what to look for. And so how do you equip those folks to spend less time doing the routine, boring processing of loan packages that we know are 90% accurate and correct? So instead of spending all this time manually entering data, maybe they just spend a little bit of time looking for any issues that are surfaced from automation technology like in Capture. So it's really going into looking at kind of every role in your organization and saying, hey, what are the things, it's back to the listening, what are the things that our team is saying, hey, look, there's got to be a better way. And then bringing in some automation technology to help with that can actually allow those folks to then spend time doing the things they really want to do, which is mentor and train your younger generation or new employees, or spend time more problem solving, or spend more time winning new business. So it's this really nice synergy that we get very excited about here when we get to go talk to lenders and hear their pain, hear their struggle, and then say, hey, there is a solution out there that allows you to become more profitable and give your team more time, both in the same solution.
You started talking a little bit about your software. How does your software work towards in improving the employee experience?
Yeah, thanks. So our platform is what we call an intelligent document automation platform. And so we come alongside any sort of lending process you have in your organization, and we look at where documents are entering the organization, how they're getting distributed around to the team, how they're getting reviewed, and ultimately, where does that data go that's coming off of these documents? And we can really come alongside that process and bring out and kind of remove or automate a lot of those routine repetitive tasks. So we have a couple products that allow front office customer facing employees to more easily collect documents, request documents, understand what's missing so that when that borrower calls a week or two in saying, hey, what's the status of my loan? And the loan officer says, oh, well, I'm still waiting on your W-2. And the borrower says, I sent that to you 2 weeks ago via email. Why don't you have it? That's just egg on the face for that loan officer. And it doesn't speak to the brand of the lender. So we have tools up front that help make that collection process very, very seamless, very, very borrower focused. And then on the back office side, so much of what we do involves our machine learning platform. So as documents come in, we can read the document, understand what it is. Is this a W-2, a pay stub, an application, a driver's license, an appraisal? And then we can extract data off of that document, and we can validate. Okay. We can look at the data on the document and ensure that it matches against your LOS or maybe a compliance process you have in place, just to check that the data is correct. So a lot of opportunities there for automation, but that's ultimately where we love playing because it allows our customers to be a lot more borrower-focused, a lot more efficient, and quite frankly, manage a lot of risk on the compliance side.
Well, it's an interesting point, and I have a question that came in. They were talking about how they're using a particular automation tool and, quote-unquote, how to sell that, because they think there's a perception that in some cases, when we use automation effectively, employees get the feeling that their jobs are at jeopardy. How do you address that when you're bringing technology that allows them to work faster and more efficiently? How do you overcome this technology going to take away my job?
Yeah, good question. What it really boils down to right now is it's not so much taking away your job. It's more about allowing you to go home at a decent hour. That's where a lot of this comes down to. It's like, hey, you've been working till 8 or 9 o'clock at night, or you're working weekends. You're taking away time from your family. And so that automation is going to take away jobs. Does it happen? It does. So I'm not going to act like it doesn't. But at the same time, so much of what we're seeing now, especially with growth-oriented lenders, is they're already burnt out. They've been like this now for a year. And yeah, maybe they're getting a bigger bonus this year or next year, but that's not going to solve the long-term shift here. And so if we can come in and position our tech as, hey, we're really here to enable your best employees to be better at what they do and to focus on higher value activities, better serving your customer, handling problems, making sure that risk is eliminated in your business. That's where we see a lot of lenders kind of nodding their heads. And our best customers that are really innovative and forward thinking, they can then take that time that people are getting back and either give it back to them in terms of work-life balance, which is impacting your culture and your ability to attract and retain talent, or it's allowing those folks to spend time elsewhere on more higher value activities.
That's such a good point. I think we have such a responsibility, and every one of you that are listeners out there, that if you're on the boss side of the formula, we should do everything we can to help with that work-life balance. And unfortunately, I know there are peaks and valleys, and we've talked about that before on the podcast, but how has software purchasing been democratized over the last few years?
Yeah, it's a different process now, Dave. I think 10, 15 years ago, even 5 years ago, it was a very top-down purchasing experience. And so someone like us would contact a C-level or EVP level that's kind of a decision maker at the organization and try to sell to them. But while that still happens, so much of this now is the actual users of the software getting involved early in the process. People want input into the systems they're using. And so it goes back to creating this caring culture. As a leader of an organization, you say, hey, I care about you being part of my organization. I want you to feel like you can be successful. Here is software from down on high that I've given you without any of your input, and I'm expecting you to use it. And if you don't use it, you're in trouble. And I don't care if you think it works well or not. And I didn't ask you your opinion when I bought it. That doesn't resonate. That doesn't align with the core values. A lot of users now getting involved much earlier in the process. We love doing that here at Incapture because we see senior level folks focus on very traditional metrics like ROI and margin impact, which are very important as part of the process. But then your users actually have to look at it and say, hey, how does this make my job easier? Would I actually enjoy using this product? Would this actually allow me to go home and have dinner with my family? Does this meet all my needs? And unfortunately, so often, employees aren't engaged in that software purchasing process. And so it leads to failed implementations or these leaders who pick the software not being able to really best realize the value out of it that they were expecting.
Yeah, I do have a question that just popped in from one of our listeners. It says, how do you get adoption of new technology, especially if there's concern about it potentially eliminating their job?
Yeah, good question. So I think it's getting folks involved early, being very open and transparent about what you're trying to do. And like I said, 9 times out of 10, this is not leading to job elimination. This is leading to kind of a better resource alignment or better productivity within your existing workforce or existing staff. I mean, there are no lenders right now that say, hey, we have too many people. Everyone is saying the opposite. We don't have enough good people. We can't staff fast enough. And so I think starting the conversation from saying, hey, look, we have a lot of folks doing things right now that are boring, mundane, routine, repetitive. We're hearing you guys talk about there's errors and there's data quality issues and we're impacting the borrower experience. What can we do internally as a team, as an entire company, to make this better internally? And getting your staff involved in that and really coming up with ideas, I think you'll be surprised. They will raise their hands and come up with the very same things you're thinking about as a leader. But because it's coming from them and they get involved in that process, there's a lot better adoption. And so we saw this, gosh, just even a month ago with a lender where we were talking to the senior level folks and they said, here's our process in terms of how we handle mortgage origination. And then we actually got to the team that actually run this team and we told them what we had heard and they were just shaking their heads saying, that's not how it works. That's not how it actually works. Those aren't really the problems that we have. Here are the problems that we have. And there was this disconnect that we were able to help kind of bridge and facilitate a really productive discussion on. But getting those folks involved early, I think, is critical. And I think you'll be surprised at how eager people are to adopt technology like this.
That's a great point. Transparency, engagement early. That's so true. So true. Alice.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I love the thoughts. I hope everybody picked up on that, that when you do get the groups involved early and they can see, here's how our business process is going to improve and here's how important your role is in that. So I think there are many ways for people to be able to see that their job is not going to be in jeopardy. And this is really going to solve some of the problems that they all say, hey, why is this so efficient? I don't want to stand at a copier. I don't want to be sorting through PDFs anymore. How can I get this to be more efficient? So I think you brought up some great points. Well, I think as we kind of look at all the opportunities that are out there as an industry, I know normally we aren't just kind of zeroed in on one product, but I'd love to hear a little bit, if it's okay, Dave, about how this product maybe is a little bit different than some of the other. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming we're using some type of data recognition, OCR type software.
Yeah, thanks, Alice. I appreciate it. I think for us, one area that we are finding that there's a lot of pain from some of the other vendors in the space is, and Dave, I think you've had some folks on your podcast who've talked about this in the past, but typically the traditional way is we need a data scientist involved. And there's a lot of custom development and programming needed, and there's a lot of care and feeding of the platform once you get it implemented. And for us, a big differentiator is the ease of use. It's really easy to get this thing up and running. We have our platform tailored for lenders. And so getting our software implemented, tuning our machine learning models with your specific documents is a lot easier than a lot of other players in the space. And so ultimately it allows us to get you a solution faster so you can start realizing that benefit much more quickly. And then quite frankly, that makes it a lot more valuable over the long term. So that's a big point for us, is especially for smaller lenders. Like, yes, the big guys, they've got staff and resources and expertise to kind of handle the complex. But a lot of smaller lenders, they don't have the time on the budget. They don't have the staff. And they're saying, hey, can you just put it in and make it work and make this thing easy? And that's where we've really tried to focus our experience.
That is good. You guys do a great job. How can people get a hold of you? Learn more about
you. Yeah, you can come visit us in capture.com on our website. Check out all of our social feeds as well. We'll be at a couple of the NBA events here coming up. Given we're based here in Dallas, we'll be at the event over in Fort Worth here next month. And then we'll be in San Diego here in the fall. So if you're there, we'd love to meet you.
We will be there. Alice will be there. And many of our listeners will be there. So I encourage people to check it out. Shout out to our sponsor, the NBA, for putting on now another conference. We're all looking so forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person. I really appreciate the fact that you're focused, rather than getting on here and talking about wanting to sell and capture, you're talking about one of the topics that's so near and dear to my heart, and that is how to create a really good employee experience, a work-life balance. And technology such as Encapture, and that's Encapture.com, correct?
That's right, Encapture.
And so, folks, check out the website. Encourage you to get to know Will and his team. Great, great group of people. Here's the key. Folks, you want to know how to be successful? Align with people that align with your values. I know many of you align with the value of maintaining as best as possible. It is challenging, that all-important work-life balance. Thanks so much, Will, for being here. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Dave and Alice. Really enjoyed the conversation today. Look forward to being on again soon.
Yeah. Alice, thank you so much for participating as you did today. It's really good to have you involved in these. It's always fun. Alice contributes so much. So come back next week and share this interview with Will has just shared with us. And I really appreciate the vision and the focus and the values that's involved in Encapture. And again, it's encapture.com. Check them out and give them a call. Let them know you heard about it on Lickin' on Lending. Appreciate you as our listeners. Next week, we've got Brent Chandler of Form Free back with us. I recorded that interview this last week, and I got to tell you, there is so much information in the vision. Again, it's like peeling the onion, Brent's vision for what could be. It's really, really exciting. I want to say a special thank you again to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Lenders One, Incelerate, Mobility, MMI, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Coop, and the Mortgage Collaborative. So grateful for their sponsorship to make this podcast possible each and every week. We're grateful to have you as our listeners. Be sure to share this podcast out. That's how we've grown to the size of a listenership that we have, is because of our faithful listeners sharing links to this podcast. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to seeing you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.